Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinton Review on this 18th of May 2016, NBA edition, as we preview and look ahead towards Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. Oklahoma City trying to take a stranglehold over this series and go up 2-0 over the Golden State Warriors. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Giro or go to Instagram and follow me at Riddle Giro Quinn. At Riddle Giro Quinn. Who's going to win the NBA championship? Right now, at 7:31, who is your favorite to win the NBA championship? Now, gun to my head, I probably would say Golden State with a question mark. That can change in the next, 4 hours. That could look a whole lot different around 11:30 tonight. If you had asked me that question roughly 3 weeks ago, I would have, looked at you like you were crazy. Like, are you really asking me that? Is that a real question? That's a real question. Really? You're going to ask me who's going to be a 2016 NBA champions? Come on. But now, with the uprising of the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Cleveland Cavaliers and the sudden slippage of play from the Golden State Warriors, that's a legitimate question right now. I'm sorry, Toronto, but you just, you should just be happy to be in the conference finals. I'm sorry, Raptors fans. You don't have a shot. Sorry. But it's a legitimate question. If you're Cleveland, if you're Oklahoma City, now is the time. Not next year, not the year after. Now is your time to get Golden State. And it sounds great. Sounds ridiculous to say that for a team that won 73 games, for a team that has the best player in the world, for a team that is still pound for pound the most talented team in the NBA. But let me be honest with you. Listen, LeBron's not getting any younger. Like, his prime years, we see how quickly it can come to an end as far as those prime years, in terms of those prime years. How many years are you going to bank on Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving being healthy? Okay. You're Oklahoma City. Things could change in July with free agency. Who knows what Kevin Durant's going to do? Nobody knows. We think he's going to stay another year. We think he is, but nobody knows for sure. Nobody knows for sure. They have the type of general manager in Sam Presley who's shown that he won't hesitate to pull the trigger on a big trade. They get frustrated with Durant doesn't commit to them this year. They go out there and trade him in an all-star break or something crazy like that. You just never know in the NBA. I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know. Now is the time if you're Oklahoma City and you're Cleveland. And I was having this discussion today. About what is driving LeBron James and Russell Westbrook. And a couple of buddies of mine thought that it was just the sheer, Steph Curry, the Steph Curry factor. Westbrook wants to prove that he's better than Curry. LeBron, of course, doesn't like all the attention that Curry has gotten as the unanimous MVP and now seemingly the new face of the league. And that's part of it. That's part of it, probably more LeBron than Westbrook. But I'm going to be honest with you. I believe that those two guys are, you know, are playing with a sense of urgency because they realize that, hey, need to win. In LeBron's case, to further, you know, cement his place amongst the immortal players in NBA history. In Westbrook's case, to cement his place amongst today's greats. Westbrook is not put in the same class as Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Stephen Curry. He's not. Even Kawhi Leonard. People don't mention him in the same, you know, sentence with those players. Fair or unfair. Now, talent-wise, we know he's right there with anybody. I mean, the guy is the best athlete in the league. I think he's the best athlete, pound for pound, in the league. But he does have a reputation of being, you know, selfish at times, playing out of control, too many gambles on defense. He played for my team any day of the week and twice on Sunday. All right, that's how I feel about Westbrook. But again, Cleveland and Oklahoma City, I would say almost have to win a championship this year. They almost, and that, again, to say that in a year where Golden State was, to me, clear-cut, heads and shoulders above everybody, even San Antonio, just shows you how quickly things can change in the NBA. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. Of course, you had the draft lottery last night. It's not a coincidence that you had Philly, LA, and Boston. That is not by any stretch of imagination a coincidence. Philly needs all the help they can get. Lakers, Celtics, historical powerhouses. I understand the fact that the NBA has gotten to a point to where free agents don't just go to the big markets, and as you can brand yourself, you can become your own brand. You don't. It doesn't like a Kevin Durant could be just as popular in Oklahoma City as he can in New York. I get it, but LA, the Lakers are still the Lakers, and the Celtics are still the Celtics. And you can't tell me that the NBA does not want those two franchises near or at the top of the league. It's just like, or not so much to be to be at the top of the league, but to be relevant, especially in the Lakers' case. Boston, of course, made the playoffs. I know Celtics fans are, you know, screaming right now, what are you talking about? Yes, you made the playoffs. Congratulations for making the playoffs and getting eliminated in the first round for the second straight year. So if you want to take, you know, bows for that. And, you know, on top of it, you don't take bows for that being a 17-time NBA championship franchise. Go right ahead. Knock yourself out. But the Lakers, you know, can't have the Lakers not relevant. So I'm not surprised that the Lakers finished second in the draft lottery and then Boston finished third. Listen, Philadelphia, you know, you get the feeling that Philadelphia is going, you know, Sam Hinkie, you know, things are starting to look up for them in regards to their possible future. There's talk that Sarge is coming back from overseas, that Embiid could be back next season. They have a lot of trade chips in terms of, you know, with his number one pick, also a couple other draft picks they have. They have some, and they have a bunch of cap space. They're, you know, things could turn around quickly for the Sixers if they play their cards right. But this is going to be the most important offseason in that franchise in recent memory for that franchise, without question. I mean, you got to get some veteran players in there to establish some type of establish a culture of winning, or a culture that we're trying to win at least. As far as the Lakers go, listen, I would prefer the number one pick, but either way, you're going to get a guy who's viewed to be a potential franchise player, whether it's Simmons or Ingram. I've said all along, you know, if you listen to my podcast, Ben Simmons to me is heads and shoulders above everybody. I don't know why it's even a debate. I'm amazed that it's a debate about Ben Simmons and being the number one pick. I just don't get it. Maybe because they say he can't shoot. I'm like, well, that's what you have a gym for, and that's what you have a shot doctor. It's not like his shot is broke. It's just he hasn't developed a jump shot. I'm like, you know, Kobe, LeBron, a lot of guys didn't have jump shots coming into the NBA. That could be fixed. Ingram weighs about 125 pounds. They're talking about he's taking in 5,000 calories a day to try to gain weight. He's at least 2 to 3 years away from being a contributing factor. Simmons can play right now. Right now, Simmons could be a contributor and a legit starter on the team right now. So those would be the two. Those would be your two top picks without question, unless the Lakers or Sixers move the pick, which is very much possible, especially for the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers, you can get DeMarcus Cousins, you can get a Paul George, you can get that level of player, then you absolutely have to move the pick and then go out there and spend a bunch of money as far as, with the cap space that the Lakers have, having close to $60 million. So the draft will be interesting. You have a bunch of couple teams with multiple picks in the draft: Boston, Philly, Denver, Phoenix. I anticipate there will be a lot of moves once you get past the first couple of picks, because really there are only two guys that are locks to go 1 and 2, and then after that it could be a lot of things happening when the draft occurs in late June. So we'll see what happens with that. Also in the NBA again, you know, for the umpteenth time during this postseason, admits to making a mistake, blowing a call down the stretch. Apparently, I didn't see Curry travel. I didn't see that travel, but the Westbrook travel was obvious. And again, the NBA admits to missing that call. And again, it's just an embarrassment to the league. You know, first of all, we don't need to hear about every missed call in the last 2 minutes. The 2-minute report, sir, to me, serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever. But The bigger issue, even beyond the 2-minute report, is how many missed calls, how many critical missed calls have there been in the playoffs this year? I mean, every night it seems like that. I mean, San Antonio, of course, took the worst of it. I mean, even at Game 7 in Indiana, you had the missed call where Miles Turner, Niami got fouled and should have went to the line in a game seven. I mean, there have been a number of big missed calls over the course of these playoffs. And again, if you're the NBA, and you're basically smacking yourself on the hand every time you get a missed call. This is becoming a recurring theme, and they gotta get this cleaned up. I mean, you can't have a championship possibly decided in a game 6 or 7 in the NBA Finals on a missed call. I mean, that would be, you know, just the worst possible scenario for the NBA moving forward. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, a feud that will never end, that's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. 347-215-6180. You can always rate and review the show at itunes.apple.com. We prefer 5 stars, but we'll take 4. Sometimes, you got to let things go in life. Sometimes it is hard when you feel like you're in the right. You'll get into an argument, and you just know you're right. You know you're right. You're not going to convince that other person or persons that you are right. That's going to be one of those situations where you agree to disagree, and eventually it gets to a point to where you just have to move on. You're like, all right, you know what? You got it. Or I don't want to talk about this anymore. Or this is a non-issue. But you got two people who seemingly are having trouble with that in Robert Griffin III and one Mike Shanahan. Mike Shanahan comes out and then takes another shot at Robert Griffin and basically basically says that Robert Griffin was being used by one Daniel Snyder as a puppet. Now, if you lived in the DMV or rooted for the Washington Redskins, this is not news to you that those two did not get along and that Daniel Snyder was in many ways an enabler of one Robert Griffin. It was clear, and nobody's going to be surprised nobody's shocked to hear that Robert Griffin was going directly to the owner when he wanted to address issues that he had with the offense. Well, apparently, there was a particular meeting that involved, Shanahan, Griffin, Kyle Shanahan, and the quarterback's coach, where Griffin had underlined, things that he wanted to change, and they even had a list of four or five things that he wanted to change, protections, plays, and that basically how he was being utilized was unacceptable. And according to Shanahan, he, thought that this was coming directly from, even though Griffin, these words were coming out of Griffin's mouth, that the phrases and some of the words that were being used were similar things that one Daniel Snyder uses, in particular the word unacceptable. So, basically, you got a situation where, again, none of this is a surprise or shock, especially as a Washington fan. What is kind of surprising is the fact that, we thought during the tenure of Mike Shanahan that he had basically sole and autonomous power of the team and decision-making. Not the case, because apparently Shanahan did not even want Griffin to begin with. Now, it wasn't so much that he didn't like Griffin coming out of college, but he did not want to give up the amount of picks and players that it took to get Griffin on the team. And you remember, we all know that 2012 trade that they made with the Rams and gave up multiple first round and second round picks, two years worth of picks, and really that really kind of set the Redskins back up until this year when they won a division title. Really set them back in the years 2013 and 2014 when they were finished last place in both years. But we all thought that Shanahan just had complete power over personnel, decisions, things of that nature. Again, it turns out that was not the case. And Shanahan is not going to let this go, because Shanahan wants to convince us all that if it wasn't for Robert Griffin and also Daniel Snyder, that he could still be the coach of the Washington Redskins, and B, led the team to multiple playoff appearances. That those two were the ones that got in his way. Not his own ego, not his own judgment in putting Griffin out there in a play after it was clear that Griffin was physically unable to perform when he got hurt in that Baltimore game. once you believe that it was, you know, Griffin and Snyder. Again, these two are going to go forever trying to convince us that it's not their fault. Like, I feel like this, you know, I feel like, you know, Shannon's been out the league for a couple of years now. Griffin, you know, joined the Browns. I feel like they would have moved on by now. That something like, that this would be a distant memory. That they wouldn't even want to talk about it, what happened. But it's not the case. I mean, it will not stop. And again, you heard what Shanahan said. I guarantee you, Griffin, in the next couple of weeks, well before the season starts, will have something to try to combat this. Absolutely, he'll say something during. Now again, it might not be till training camp, preseason, but he will absolutely say something to respond to this. It's no question about it. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, the double standard in OKC. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Queen Review. We'll be right back. Back to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review as we look ahead towards a game two of the Western Conference Finals. Again, Oklahoma City tried to take a commanding 2-0 lead. First, I never thought that I would be saying this in this postseason, that Golden State was in a situation where it was a must-win. I just never thought that those words would come out of my mouth over the course of the 2016 postseason. But, again, Oklahoma City has grown up and stepped up and has, you know, been able to, in many ways, be the team that we thought they could be year in and year out, while Golden State has kind of taken a step back, a small step back, but just enough to give Oklahoma City, an edge in this series up until this point. Now, that can all change tonight, but as, you know, Oklahoma City deserved to win game one, outplayed Golden State in particular in the second half, and just, you know, had a big fourth quarter. And again, they didn't score a lot of points in the fourth quarter. I mean, 23 points is not a lot of points, but you would never think that Golden State would only have a 14-point fourth quarter. So we'll talk about that game later on in the program, as again, Golden State is looking to even the series at one game of peace. If I told you that this player shot 7-for-33 in a game and 10-for-30, who would you guess? Would you guess Durant or Westbrook? Had a 7-for-33 game and a 10-for-30 game. You probably, without watching the games, would lean towards Westbrook, and you would be wrong. Kevin Durant, over the course of this postseason, had a game two against Dallas where he shot 7-for-33, the most shots missed since Michael Jordan in game four, the famous golf game. I'll tell you why it was a golf game. Game four of the 97 Eastern Conference Finals. It was called the famous golf game because Jordan, a day before that game, played something like a ridiculous 96 holes of golf in like 90-degree heat in Miami, and then tried to play a game the day played a game the day later. I mean, yeah, and you know, Jordan was a maniac. I mean, the guy had energy for days, and you know, we all know the physical specimen that he was. But come on, I mean, Mike, you're still in the playoffs here. It's 96 holes of golf. Over the course of in one day, right before a playoff game. you would think that Russell Westbrook would be the one who had those kind of shooting numbers, but that was not the case. After game one, everybody wanted to talk about the two main stories. Number one, Westbrook's third quarter. That was a big one. And second, what's wrong? What happened to Golden State in the fourth quarter? Why did they take bad shots, turnovers, that type of stuff? Even Steven Adams would have been a third story, especially with the little comments that he made about the little monkeys, little quick monkeys, which he apologized for. But no, there was not. I mean, Kevin Durant really didn't take much heat as in comparisons to what Russell Westbrook takes when he has a poor game. When Kevin Durant has a bad game, and it's not that often because he's an efficient player. You know he's a great player, the best scorer in this league. But when he does have an off game, shooting-wise, it kind of goes under the radar as, you know what, he'll bounce back next game. Or, you know what, he had 10 rebounds and he had 5 assists. He did other things. Russell Westbrook has a bad game shooting-wise. It's let's run this dude out of as I apologize for that. Clearly somebody doesn't know that I'm doing a show right now, but that's okay. But when Russell Westbrook has a bad game, it's let's run this guy out of town. He's selfish. I wonder what it would be like if they had Chris Paul or John Stockton didn't play like this. We crucify Russell Westbrook when he has a bad shooting game. We don't look at his assists. We don't look at the fact that he'll play 45 minutes nonstop. None of that. All that goes out the window. We just look at the fact that he missed 21 shots or whatever. We don't even look at the fact that he apologizes when he has a bad game, as was the case last series against San Antonio. Westbrook had a 10-for-31 game and said, "Hey, I took too many shots." People barely made a mention of that. Barely. But again, I'm trying to figure out what the double standard is because Westbrook is a guy who, to me, is everything you want in a franchise player. He wants the pressure. He's talented. He's exciting. He's going to draw fans. He can do offensively. He can do it. He can do everything. He's young. You can market him. You can market him. Never been in trouble off the court. Again, is a guy that you can sell. He's going to sell tickets. He's going to put up numbers, and he wants to win in the worst way. So I'm trying to figure out what the problem with Russell, what the problem we have with Russell Westbrook in regards to versus Kevin Durant, and why does Kevin Durant get a pass in comparison to Russell Westbrook? I'm trying to figure that out. Because like Russell Westbrook, the last time I checked, Kevin Durant hasn't won a championship either. Okay. Like Russell Westbrook. And again, Durant's the better player. Like if you're building a franchise around and you're picking one, of course you take Durant. He's more efficient and he's 7 foot with a jump shot and a crossover. Like that, they don't make guys like Kevin Durant. Like, there's no point guard like Russell Westbrook as far as what he does physically, but you can find there are other great point guards that, the NBA is loaded with point guards. The NBA is not loaded with Kevin Durant's. The guys that can do what Kevin Durant can do. But that's not the argument. The argument is not who's a better player. The argument is why do we treat one way and the other another way? For what reason? Is it the interviews? Because last time I checked, Durant could be kind of snippy with the media as well. Like, I've never heard a teammate complain about Kevin Durant, about Russell Westbrook. Not one publicly or privately. Never. Very interesting. It's very, and again, pay attention. pay attention to what when Westbrook has a bad game versus Durant has a bad game. Really pay attention to it. And the differences of reaction nationally, the reactions that they get when they have bad games. 347-215-6180. This is the Cyril Jerome Quinn Review. We'll be right back. (347) 215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Jerome Quinn Review as we get ready for a game number 2 in the Western Conference Finals. Oklahoma, not shockingly, take game 1 from the Golden State Warriors. From a Golden State team right now that is, a little shaky right now. I mean, you got to be honest with you. The Portland series, they kind of got a pass because Curry missed a couple of games, missed two games, missed the first two games of the series, the first three games of the series. Came back in, of course, game 4 and had that tremendous overtime in the second half where he scored 40 points, 17 in the overtime. So they kind of got a bit of a pass from that standpoint, trying to get him back, work him back into the mix, not having him. They still were able to get rid of Portland in 5. Portland, of course, we lauded their effort. They did a tremendous job with the amount of young talent they have, Lillard and McCollum and guys like that. But, Golden State, they are not playing as well as they were playing this time last year going into the conference finals. They're not. And they're certainly not playing the level that they were playing at during the course of the regular season. Now, you can say, hey, calm down. Again, Curry has missed a number of games over the course of the playoffs. There were a lot of people who in game 1 thought that he wasn't as explosive. I was not one of them. I didn't think, not one time, why in watching Curry did I think about that injury, about his knee. I thought he was moving well, but apparently, there are people who say he just wasn't as explosive. In particular, the fourth quarter, he did have 26-10-7, took 22 shots. So I thought, again, it wasn't a vintage Curry performance, but I didn't think that he had physical limitations. I just thought that he, Russell Westbrook, Russell Westbrook did a pretty good job on him in the second half. He missed makeable shots. They, as a team, Golden State panicked in that fourth quarter, that third and fourth quarter. Just took bad shots, didn't run the offense. It almost was like Golden State was shocked that the game was close in the fourth quarter. That's how you almost got that particular sense, and they didn't believe that Oklahoma City would be, they were waiting for Oklahoma City to fall apart in the fourth quarter. A few of their games during the regular season against Oklahoma City would play them nip and tuck for three quarters, and Golden State would have a late run in the fourth quarter to run away and win the game. That was not the case in the fourth quarter. But I didn't get the sense that there was any physical ailments, knee, ankles, in regards to Steph Curry. I didn't see it. So it's something to be, there is some concern about his knee. Before the game, a couple of days ago, he did say that the knee hasn't really gotten any better, that he's basically going to have to try to tough it out. Sure. I mean, again, he's on the court. We saw him have a 40-point game against Portland. Then we saw him follow that with a 33-point game. So, I'll say it about him as I would to any player who has come up, who is playing. I don't want to hear about any injuries when you're playing. He played over, you know, close to 39, 40 minutes. He shot 20, he took 22 shots. Nobody wants to hear about the injuries. I mean, it is what it is. You're playing, you had 40 in a game against Portland. You averaged basically 35 points a game the last two games of the Portland series. So, you know, he's out there, he's playing. I don't want to hear about any lack of explosion. I don't think, you know, look at this game. I don't know what adjustments will be made. If you're going to State, you know, you just got to take better shots. You just got to take better. You can't rush shots. Golden State this year shot as a team 41% from 3-point range and 48% as a team from the field. Part of that reason, other than the fact that they have two of the greatest shooters in the world, the two best shooters in the world, but part of that reason is because they have some of the best, probably the best ball movement of any team, even including San Antonio, in the league. So, fourth quarter, they were not moving the ball in the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter, again, they panicked, took fast shots. They were not running their offense in the fourth quarter. They were just taking bad shots left and right, and really were taking Oklahoma City off. Really were taking Oklahoma City off the hook. Didn't make them play defense for a sustained amount of periods, for a sustained period. Remember, that first half, Golden State was getting layups after layup after layup. And they were running offense. They scored 60 points in the first half. I don't know how many dunks and layups they got. They got a tremendous amount. They got at least 8 to 10 layups in the first half, it seemed like. Also, if you're Golden State, and, you know, again, I said this, thought about this after the game, I thought about this yesterday following the game, that Draymond Green cannot be a volume scorer or shooter on that team. You can't have him taking 20 shots. That was way too many shots. It's too much. It was too much Draymond Green. If you're going to look at Draymond Green and measure Draymond Green, look at his rebounds, look at his assists. That's all you need to look at when it comes to Draymond Green, his rebounds and his assists. Forget about his scoring. He doesn't need to get 20 to 23 points. He needs to be in that 13 to 16 range and in that 7 to 10 range in terms of assists, in terms of rebounds, you know, that 5 to 8 range, you know, that 5 to 8 range in terms of assists. This year, he almost averaged 10 rebounds and led all forwards in assists, even all forwards, including LeBron James. So, you know, I thought, you know, he played a big role in taking Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry out of rhythm by how many shots that he was taking. He's just taking 20 shots is just too many shots for Draymond Green. It's too many. Because what happens is you get three guys taking the majority of the shots. That leaves nothing or next to nothing for a Livingston, for an Iguodala, for a Barbosa, to a lesser extent, Azili and Bogut. Leaves nothing for those guys. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review, previewing Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. Of course, you know, we all know what happened last night with Cleveland and Toronto, and what is the biggest, probably going to be one of the biggest mismatches that you'll ever see in the conference finals, considering that you had two 51 teams. Listen, Cleveland, you know, the Eastern Conference right now is not in a good place. Yes, you have LeBron James, but there's not much else that you have in the Eastern Conference. And it's amazing with the Eastern Conference how it's been a perfect storm of events to get the conference in this direction. I mean, we really, 6 years ago, we really were supposed to have a budding rivalry or a great rivalry between LeBron and Dwayne Wade. That was supposed to be the rivalry that drove the Eastern Conference for the next half decade. Wade in Miami, LeBron in Cleveland. Two all-time great players. Instead, LeBron goes to Cleveland, takes Bosh, who at the time was a top 15, top 20 player with him. Derrick Rose can't stay healthy. Indiana falls apart. And that was it. I mean, that was it. You have basically four significant players, or you have five significant players in the Eastern Conference, and LeBron basically has been on teams with three of them. So you have LeBron, Wade, Bosh, Paul George, and Derrick Rose. Okay. Derrick Rose hurt. Indiana falls apart. Paul George then gets hurt. Miami goes to four straight finals. You move LeBron to Cleveland. Again, three all-star caliber players in Love, LeBron, Kyrie. Indiana's reloading. Derrick Rose, of course, will never be the same. Chicago's a mess despite the emergence of Jimmy Butler. Wade's getting older. Miami, you know, again, couldn't stay healthy. No Bosh, no Whiteside. And you're left with a conference that, again, it is a absolute exhibition. These are scrimmages for Cleveland. These are not even tough games. Like, it's gotten easier. You know, Detroit is going to end up that Detroit probably plays them the toughest out of anybody in the Eastern Conference. And they're number 8 seed, who hadn't been in the playoffs in 6 years. Excuse me, in 7 years, going back since 2009. You know, for the sake of the NBA, somebody needs to step up in the Eastern Conference. I mean, Boston needs to make a big. They can make a big trade. I don't know who else would be a candidate. I don't know what Indiana is doing right now, to be honest with you. You know, Charlotte seems to me they have a ceiling. This is not going to change unless LeBron just leaves Cleveland, goes somewhere else, forms a super team somewhere else, or you have Kevin Durant come to Miami or come to Washington. Also, the Wizards underachieving because you thought they were a team that could possibly be on the rise. Jeff Hornacek just named. Apparently, Jeff Hornacek is going to be named to be the head coach of the Knicks. Hornacek, of course, is let go by Phoenix, who again another franchise that doesn't have a clue. One was coach of the year, I believe, one coach of the year last year, a couple years ago. And you know the team, you know they trade. They have three point guards. Get rid of Dragic. Get rid of Isaiah Thomas. And find themselves as being again one of the worst franchises in the league. Frankly, they just don't have a clue what they're doing right now, and they find themselves being a year in and year out lottery team. So, Hornacek's going to get the Knicks job. I like Hornacek as a coach. I don't think that Phoenix, what happened in Phoenix, is his fault. I just think it works for a dysfunctional organization. If you're a Knicks, you know, this is a major, major upgrade over Kurt Rambis. And there was no way that Kurt Rambis could be the head coach going into next year. So it was a good move by the Knicks to get Jeff Hornacek. I'm sure some Knicks fans may want Frank Vogel or maybe even Van Gundy. But I don't know if Van Gundy's even going to coach again, to be honest with you. Once you've been out in the league for, you know, that long, trying to get back into it is not easy. Okay, I mean, how many tell this? What you're doing. So Hornacek will be the head coach of the Knicks. Game two, Warriors, Oklahoma City. Looking forward to it. I will see you next time on the next edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. Have a great evening.